This is actually the session I know the least about. Really, I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, I know a lot about ritual. I guess this is the session I have the least amount to say, as far as examples, because, and this is why it's important for us to talk about it, because there aren't a lot of examples of how congregations do this in the public square with young people. So this will be, those of you who have come to other sessions, this will be much more of a dialogue and conversation than other sessions that we've done together. So I will start by asking you to come forward and pick a rock from the table. Just come, everyone come up, grab a rock, and then have a seat, and I'll give you further instructions. And the next step would be for you to do two things. Give your rock a name and come up with a story about your rock. Brief story. So I'll give you a minute on your own, in silence, to think of a name for your rock and a brief story for your rock. Okay? And then if you would, just turn to someone you're sitting next to and introduce them to your rock. Tell them your rock's name and your rock's story. Has everyone introduced their partner to their rock?
Yes.
Okay, we'll just quickly say, what was your rock's name?
Ecola.
Bob.
Wilbur.
Bob.
Huh? Pete. Peter. Did you go with the rock Peter thing to get to Pete? Pete. Okay. All right, great.
Wait, everybody's doing names. I did strength.
Oh. That's the name was strength?
Yeah, just strength.
Strength. Okay, all right.
Cool.
Okay.
Sam.
Sam.
Here's another Bob.
Bob. Three Bobs.
Yeah.
Pie.
Pie.
Oh, great.
Salt and pepper.
Salt and pepper.
Smooth.
Speckles. First I thought Bob, and then other brother Daryl came to mind.
Other brother Daryl.
Rocky.
Last week we had like five Rockies.
Oh, really?
Yeah. All right, so just bring your rocks back up. Put them on the pile, please. Say thanks, Rock. Thanks, Bob. See you.
Bye, Bob One.
Bob One. Yeah, hard to give it away. So, again, we're using the theme text for Holden Village this summer as the launching pad into our topics this week. And again, just a review of the text. It starts with Ezekiel having this vision of an angel showing him the river flowing out of the temple. And you can see that image back here. And as they walk further from the temple, the river gets deeper and wider and more powerful. And the angel turns to the guy and says, "Mortal, do you see how powerful how wide and deep God's mercy is as it flows from the temple?" And it brings life. You can see it. It brings life up here, fruit to eat and leaves for healing, fruit for food and leaves for healing. So there's birds eating the food here. They're gathering the fruit. And down here you can see this verse depicted. People will stand fishing beside the sea from En Gedi to En Eglaim. It will be a place for the... En Eglaim is the Dead Sea. It will be a place for the spreading of nets. Its fish will be of great many kinds, like the fish of the great sea. So you can see them spreading nets here. It will be a place, and this is these are the words I want us to focus on, a place for the spreading of nets. As I was sitting on my front porch at home getting ready for these sessions, my neighbors came back from, they go up every summer to a little island up in the Boundary Waters in Minnesota, and they own a small island that's about the size of this room probably. They put a tent up, and they spend a week up there, and their son, who just graduated high school, I was talking with him, and I'm like, so do you get bored up there? He's like, no, I love it. I just fish all day long. And so we were talking about fishing, and I like to fish because I like to sit there and not do anything, right? And which is usually how fishing goes for me. I said,
you don't put any bait on it.
Exactly. Well, it doesn't matter if I put bait on it or not. I have the same results. And he said to me, so I was telling him, well, I just can never catch fish. And he said, oh, we catch a lot of fish. And he said, you just need to know where and when to fish. And I thought, as I was kind of working on these sessions, I thought, wow, that's, you just need to know where and when to fish. So, but how does he, Rowan, he's 18, how does Rowan know where and when to fish?
He's done a lot of it.
Practice, he's done a lot of it.
He's paid attention to others.
He fishes with his uncle, who fished with his grandfather, right? So they know this island, they know the lake, they know where the fishing holes are, and when you go to one, move from one hole to the other hole, right? So they've marked these places, and they marked these times. And that's really what ritualizing is. It's marking places and marking times. And so then for Rowan, you know, I think about him as a young man. Think if for whatever reason he doesn't get back to that island for a long time, just going to those fishing holes, whether he catches fish or not, will become important to him, right? Because they've marked those places and they've marked those times, and he has stories connected to that, to those places that are really important to him. This is where my grandpa told me about when grandma died, or this is where we caught 20 fish in 15 minutes, right? So he knows where to fish and when to fish because his grandfather and his uncle have taught him that. So that's what we're talking about when we talk about ritualizing. So what I would like you to do now is come forward and grab your rock, please, and go back to your seat.
Same rock.
Yep, come and get your rock. So is everyone pretty sure they got their rock? Think so? Close, maybe? Maybe not? All right. Now, they are different. Some of them look different from one another, but they're still rocks about the same size. So why were you able to actually find your rock?
Because I named it.
You named it? Yeah. All right, great. It wasn't rough enough when you came back. Yeah, right.
Because I knew you were going to help us go pick it up. And I knew exactly where I put it.
They do this in Girl Scouts.
Plan.
Right, so you named it. You gave it a story, right? So that this rock became a little more important to you than just a rock you would step on as you walked down the road, right? So let me read you another text. This is from Joshua. I better put these on.
We all get here.
Yeah, I know. Well, and the size of the print doesn't help either.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is from Joshua chapter 4. So the Israelites are now, finally leaving the wilderness and crossing the Jordan River into the promised land. When the entire nation had finished crossing over the Jordan, the Lord said to Joshua, "Select 12 men from the people, one from each tribe, and command them to take 12 stones from here out of the middle of the Jordan, from the place where the priest's feet stood. Carry them over with you and lay them down in the place where you camp tonight." Okay, so what's happening? They're picking up rocks. I mean, literally, what's happening here?
They're picking rocks out of the water.
Moving them to another place, putting them where they're going to camp. Then Joshua summoned the 12 men from the Israelites, whom he had appointed, one from each tribe. Joshua said to them, "Pass on before the ark of the Lord your God into the middle of the Jordan, and each of you take up a stone on your shoulder, one for each of the tribes of the Israelites, so that this may be a sign among you. When your children ask in time to come, 'What do these stones mean to you?' then you shall tell them that the waters of the Jordan were cut off in front of the ark of the covenant of the Lord. When it crossed over the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. So these stones will be to the Israelites a memorial forever." So why do they pick up stones and put them in a pile?
History.
Remember?
Yes,
the
kids will see that and ask them.
Yeah, let's make a pile of stones here so when the kids are playing down by the river, they'll say, "Mom, Dad, what's with the stones?" Yeah, and then you have to tell them. You have to tell them the story, because if our kids aren't asking these questions, we don't tell the stories. So that's a beautiful way of thinking about, why do we do this? You know, why do we, I'm thinking of some rituals that I know from our, why do we, the night before Easter, why do we start the service around a bonfire in the middle of the city? why do we build a bonfire here in the middle of the city? We do these things. What God is saying to Joshua is, do this so that the kids will ask you questions. That's the image I like us to hold on to, at least for the next 45 minutes. Do this so kids will say, "What the heck are you doing?" Then we have to tell them. So that's how I want us to think about ritualizing. I would say ritualizing is really important. I'm going to throw these three things up here, and then we're going to spend the rest of the time just brainstorming together. I would say ritualization is extremely important for young people for three reasons. One, and again, this is not, it's important not just for young people, but for all of us because of these reasons. One would be the loss of time. That we generally, ironically, are so addicted to time and so conscious of time that we've also sort of lost it. Or lost control over it, maybe. It controls us, right? So that you never really fully know. The way I describe it, when I walk into class sometimes before I teach, I just need to ask the class just to take a moment of silence. Just the way I describe it is just so that my soul can catch up with my body. Like, my body's here, but I don't know if there's any other part of me here right now. And I need to just take a moment and know that this is where I'm at. So we've lost this sense of time. We climate control buildings, right? So then we sort of lose a sense of seasons too. There's all these things we do in our society that make us lose touch with the changes of time, the seasons of time, and important moments in time. So we celebrate birthdays, right? But what about other important markers in time? So we'll try and brainstorm some of those in a little bit. The other reality is that we've lost a sense of place. And I am a fan of technology. I am not anti-technology by any means, but I think technology makes this really easy, right? So if you're in a conversation, Petter was talking the other day about being in his session about being on camels, right, in the Sahara or wherever they were at, and then a student getting a cell phone call, you know, in the middle of nowhere. So if you are in a conversation with someone and you get a text from another person somewhere else, and maybe that text is legitimately as important as the conversation you're having, where are you in that moment? Are you with the person you're talking to, or are you with the person you're texting? Where should you be? Right?
Or you're with neither.
What's that?
Or you're with neither, because you are two places that you can't be those two.
Right. Or you're with neither, right? So this idea of losing a sense of time and losing a sense of place, also our mobile culture, if someone were to ask me, think of the place you consider to be home as a child, visualize your childhood home, I think of my parents' summer house, because they moved a lot, you know, and I wasn't really, and I have bad memories of the place where I was a child, and I would rather not, I don't think of that really as home. I think of the summer house where when we were there, I was with my parents and they were with me. I think of that as home. We were only there 3 weeks a year. But that's the home that comes to my mind when I think of home. So society has become so mobile that we've lost the sense of place. What are the times that are... So I guess what I'm trying to get is how do we as communities of faith start to think about times that are important for us and places that are important for us? How do we think about moments, events in our communities that are important for our communities? And how do we think about places that are important for our communities? And how do we name those and claim those as sacred times and sacred places? Again, in South Minneapolis, I think of the May Day Parade as something that has become for the entire city, mostly. And it's not it's not a religious... churches are not putting it on, but I would consider it to be quite religious. Marking time and marking place. It's about this neighborhood. It's about this time of year. It's about hope and life anew. And the third thing I think we've lost is loss of passage. When did you know you became an adult? Still working on it. Don't really know. You ask young people, it's all over the place. The first time I had sex, when I could drive, when I could vote, when I went to college, when I graduated from college, when I had my first child, when I got my first job. It's all over the place. They don't know. We don't know when we become adults. And many of us are still working on it. I was talking to someone just before this session, and I was describing another person. I said, well, he's youngish. He's young, a young guy, right? And he goes, oh, no, he's not that young. He's probably like our age. I'm like, that's what I mean. He's like our age. He's like young. Right? What the heck? So I think these three are all related. It's hard to talk about losing time without talking about losing place and without talking about losing passage. We sometimes also, as a society, ritualize passages that maybe aren't even really that meaningful for young people. The rite of confirmation, just not that meaningful for a lot of young people to be confirmed. And it could be for a lot of reasons. It could be because we're doing it at the wrong age. It could be because we're doing it in a strange way. I don't think we can really point to one thing and say this is why confirmation isn't really very meaningful. But I think we can all pretty much agree that it's not very meaningful for most young people.
I just had a question. Can you just say again about loss of time?
Yeah.
Can you just say a little more about that? Just to help get my head around what you mean by that.
I mean, we've lost sort of a sacred way of remembering important times in our lives. Does that make sense? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I wish I had lots of examples of how communities do this, and I don't. And I imagine maybe you guys have some, but I really want to just spend this session talking about authenticity and discipline. I should have mentioned this.
That's like a
I really want to just spend this time thinking about these things. So what? And
So
what are the not just moments in our kids' lives, but what are some moments that happen in our communities? Or what are some places that we know of in our communities? So events, places in our communities that are really important for our communities that we could somehow mark that way. So let's just make a list of events and or places.
Election first. Day.
Okay, Election Day. Yeah.
Great.
Man, there's just, not to take away from Election Day, that's a great example too, because we want to sort of nurture them into thinking of this time as an important day, right? But first day of school, they get that. It's so full of emotions for kids.
And last day.
Oh, yeah. Why 16?
Because now I can drive.
Okay. So it's more about driving than...
I think so.
Yeah.
I think maybe we need to talk about graduation, too.
Yeah.
Okay. So that could be high school and college. It could be anybody.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of churches might announce their graduates and maybe even have them stand up, but how do you actually really bless them?
We do quilts.
Yep. Right.
So people make quilts all through the year, and then we have a senior quilt day in June, and the people that have made the quilts will stand up in the front, and the people that are receiving them come, and then they wrap them around
cool.
and give a blessing. First time I saw.
Yeah. Right. I mean, that's a way of taking a, like, we want to honor our graduates, but how do we do it in a way that really shows them that we got their back, right? And that this is a special time. This is a special time for them and for us. Yeah.
Our church makes a booklet. There's a Sunday that honors them with a reception, and they're up in front of the altar, you know, blessing them as they go on, and a booklet of where they've been, where they're going, and it's a pretty big deal.
Sure.
But the blank, the quilts, that is really cool.
Yeah.
I said, say retirement.
Okay, yeah. So young people, maybe not necessarily as the recipient of this blessing, but how do we incorporate them in? I mean, this is another way. So it's ritualizing not just for or of our young people, but with, right? So how do we weave them into these marks of time.
What about first job?
Yeah.
Not the first job you had as a teenager, though, the first full-time, I had to support myself kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
Even first job as a teenager. I remember that, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Anniversary of baptism and birth.
Yep.
And baptism confirmation.
Gretchen?
Yes.
You had said something?
Baptism and confirmation, just those times too.
Yeah.
church, we have this ongoing yearly commitment to Lourdes Canoe Base,
sure.
which a whole group of people go and open it up, and that's kind of a ritual too, ritual behavior. And even people who aren't on the trip kind of feel a part of it, kind of, as most people have been one time, right?
Yeah.
They feel it.
And it's so it, and it's a time, but it's also a place, right? Where
place, activities,
So wilderness becomes a special place for the community.
It becomes connected in some ways to the congregation.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's not this pastor, but a lot of times it's a group of youth that go together
right.
and they kind of hang out together. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. and even though their parents might be there too, it's kind of a bonding.
But it's, I mean, it's this long-term relationship between a congregation and another place that becomes special for the community.
I'm saying something that's more, a more individual, personal thing versus community, but it's significant. It's just the physical maturation of young people, mm-hmm. and just the various things that happen for mm-hmm. girls and for boys, and just, some communities... Probably still, but certainly more communities longer ago, I think used to really mark those changes.
Yeah, right. Which the church is kind of scared to talk about bodies, right? But when you're a young person, you sort of can't ignore what's happening to your body. And we don't give them any framework to understand it. We just hope they'll figure it out by themselves.
Our youths are tied, they go on, unless it's like the summer to New Orleans mission trips.
Sure.
And again, they're tied to the congregation because each one has a person that daily, there's a packet that goes with them with written devotions and a little treat. And it's put in daily envelopes for them that they get. So there's, they're not just off, but they have the prayers.
Yep.
I mean, there's prayers when they go, but they know people are praying for them back, so there's a connection.
Yep. I've done the same thing where people sponsor, maybe they sponsor a kid or we get them connected with a prayer partner, they meet them before the trip, but the prayer partner would do a similar thing, send some things along with us that we then give the kid each day.
That's how it is.
And, but then the kids are also asked to send postcards or things like that to their prayer partner each day on the trip. That was in the day of mail. Now it might happen differently, you know. You can do so much online. I know, Sandy, when you took the kids to camp, you were posting, you had a blog, or you were posting pictures of the kids there, and I've heard a lot of parents talk about how they like to be able to sort of see what their kids were doing. That's a way of marking time and place for people who aren't there, too.
Well, and that's interesting when you think of, like, wilderness and camp and mission trips, is that we think of the ritualization of the young people, but I think there's also this piece for parents, whether it be the first time they're sending their kids to camp, or families creating space outside of that young person, too.
And the first day of school is, a big deal for the parents, too.
You put your little kindergartner on a school bus, and you're like, what? How inhumane is this thing I just did to my child, right? I heard someone talk about, anyway, we won't go off on that.
I thought it was kind of cool when we were at the gathering. A family has a home theater, and they opened up their home one night and watched the live streaming of the worship service at the dome at the same time. And so it was really a neat connection because we knew that there were people at home there with us. Mm-hmm. And we were texting back and forth and telling them where we were and all that.
Accommodating to the time.
Yeah, it was
really cool.
And as luck would have it, four of our kids got big, huge headshots during that.
Oh, did they really? Cool.
Yeah.
What was happening in the dome? Was it like a big convention?
Every night in the ELCAU gathering was just there.
Oh,
and so they streamed it live each night from the Superdome. And the night that they were watching was the night we were on the main floor.
Wow.
So they saw the kids.
That's neat. That's really neat. Yeah.
That's cool.
Sunday worship.
Say more. How, yeah.
Thank you. Well, we try to include all ages in worship, parts of worship, so that they do leadership, and I think that that's setting up a ritual. I mean, I think our Sunday worship is wonderful, mm-hmm. because it goes through periods, everybody does, but it's life-giving, and
yep.
someplace I want to be on mm-hmm. Sunday, and I like the inclusion of
So marks this weekly rhythm of the Christian community.
I was just thinking about all these are all minutes or maybe an hour long, these kinds of celebrations or rituals, and I think about, I'm wondering if you're going to talk about what draws these things into the future. There's a relationship piece there that, for instance, you celebrate graduation, you do some amazing stuff for the kids in this 5-minute kind of ritual, and then it's like they're gone, and I don't know, I feel like myself thinking about that future piece, how do we stay connected.
Yeah, well, that's a whole nother
section.
Yeah, that's a whole nother conversation, and I think, I mean, the truth is, you won't be.
Yeah.
At some point, you won't be. I mean, with your own kids, yeah, but with other people's kids in the congregation, the truth is most likely you won't be. And so then, I mean,
does it need to be that way? It just feels like
no, it doesn't need to be. But sometimes it just is, and it's not because we're doing anything wrong or they're doing anything wrong. It just happens, right? So. This is why I think marking place and time is important, so that they develop rhythms and routines and places that, maybe this place is where this rock is the rock I stood on and fished with Nathan when we went to Wilderness Canoe Base. And whether Nathan's there or not, that rock's still there, right? So the relationship's still there. And that's really what rituals can do.
You know, I've found over the years and the kids who have come through our congregation stuff that it amazingly, I mean, I've run into very few who, I think most of them feel like they can come back mm-hmm. there. You might not see someone for a long time, and we actually just ran into Olivia Washington downtown eating, and we had lunch with her, and we said, why don't you come to church? People would love to see you. She came 2 weeks later, she was at church.
Yeah.
But I think they, when you have this relationship and you maybe have these little rituals mm-hmm. with mm-hmm. those kids that even if they may never come back, but if they do, they feel welcome.
Yeah.
What they know they can do that.
So let's try and move now out into public. All right. What are things, the public things in the community that a community might experience, or places in a community that we think, well, we should really do something about this. We should really mark this in some way. Are there places in your communities or times that you can think of that are more public?
We do a 4th of July parade.
Okay.
Near kind of our church, but it's the, you know, it's inside the community, and that's been a big thing.
Some kind of tragedy happens.
Yep.
Yeah. Too much of that.
Every community I worked in, when I was doing youth ministry in churches, every community I worked in had at least one young person die every year that I was working there. Accidental or not, and so, what do you do as a congregation when a 14-year-old kills himself? What do you do, not only just in your congregation, but for the friends of that 14-year-old? Sort of like physical development, death is one of these things we don't really want to. Death is one of these things we don't really want to mark or talk about.
I'm thinking about a park across from where we live.
Yeah.
It's called Triangle Park. It's just a little park at the end of 35W downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And when we moved in, we very rarely saw people sitting there. But in the last few years, the single occupancy hotel across the street has been used as a shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And now the park is full all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't think of marking it, but I think it's an important important marker that this park was there, wasn't being used, mm-hmm. and now it is, because mm-hmm. they don't have any place else to sit outside. Mm-hmm.
Those of you who were at the first session I did when we talk about accompaniment, we talk about going into the community and looking for, some call it asset mapping, you know, but you go into the community and you look for these places of consolation and desolation, and with young people, and they start to find the places that are holy ground, really. And then why can't we do something to call it that? Like, well, here's this rundown neighborhood, but look at this great community garden. Well, what can we do here? It doesn't have to be profound. It doesn't have to be a marking of time, but it doesn't have to be something we do every year. Or maybe we do. Maybe every spring we do a Sunday morning worship service at the community garden to just be thankful for growth and community and change, and right?
Our church also does
a
walk on Good Friday through the neighborhood.
Okay.
Where I didn't think of it as consolation and
what
was the other word? Desolation, but it's kind of what we're doing.
Yeah. And you do that in the company of other churches.
Mm-hmm. You walk and pray at different locations.
Yeah, it's like Stations of the Cross, only there are places in the neighborhood.
So you might pray at the hospital or something like that, right? So someone last week was talking about a prayer service they did with the kids at the fire department. You know, and that the firefighters that who were there kind of came out and were a part of that. Same sort of thing. We want to just, let's just gather here today and give thanks for the people who are always sort of ready to protect us when we need them.
This year we stopped at the place where a woman had been crossing the street and was killed.
Sure.
And lived in the housing that was
there. Right. So doing that with young people, one, it honors that woman. Absolutely, right? But with young people, it also helps them start to realize that this faith narrative we have helps us make sense of tragedy that happens in this place. So it's not, I'm not just talking about doing things that feel good and are nice, but I'm talking about doing things. This is discipleship, trying to understand what God's doing in our world as it's unfolding, right? Rather than keeping it sort of self-contained and easily organized.
You're making me think, all the way across Aurora, which we have some incredible inner city problems,
mm-hmm.
gangs,
mm-hmm.
stuff, there is a walk, and I know of the walk, and it's a long ways from the east side, way over to the west side, not far on the same street that we're on, as some churches feed people and so on, and I don't think our church participates, let alone opening it up to youth to be part of something like this. They stop and pray. It's ecumenical.
Mm-hmm.
It's many people where there's a gang-related death. There's pastors
mm-hmm.
and community that always go
mm-hmm.
right
mm-hmm.
after that,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know how our church knows about it, but you made me think about becoming a part of that public statement. It's in the paper, you know.
When there's violent acts, there's a group in Minneapolis called Mad Dads. Whenever a young person's killed in gun violence, these Mad Dads come out and do a vigil. So we don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are enough Mad Dads out there. We can just come alongside of them and say, we're here with you.
And we have a gentleman in Aurora that makes the crosses.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Colorado, he didn't even want to go to a family wedding. He had to get himself in his car and get out there for 11 crosses that were placed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's things that we can do with our youth, you know, the church,
mm-hmm.
publicly.
Mm-hmm.
Service, we came back and someone had replaced the cross with a tree that was in bloom, but
but then stayed in the park. I was in the park. And I hadn't thought about it for a long time, and I remember, I wonder if our kids remember, because they were just little. Mm-hmm. But to me, it was a wonderful way mm-hmm. to celebrate Easter, mm-hmm. you know, in a public place.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, it seems to me you could also ritualize things like, there's a place where you go and you serve the meal, and maybe you do it once a month, or maybe you do it once a year, but you do it in a way that it becomes an important part of what the church does. And then that's kind of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes a more ordinary thing than some of these things that are up there,
mm-hmm.
and you do it every
and it becomes a discipline or a practice.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
People moving into a house
mm-hmm.
or moving out of a house.
Yeah.
When I lived in Windham, Minnesota, there was a welcome wagon.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't church-based, but it felt like something that a church could be involved in. And they somehow found out who was moving in the neighborhood. And
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a basket of stuff, and welcome, and call me if you have questions.
Yeah, I forgot about that. We got that when we moved it to Valparaiso. That was the last happy moment I had in Valparaiso. But I'm kidding. But it was the people who were doing the welcome wagon was the Chamber of Commerce. So it had a certain. It was nice, but it was also sort of like
commercial.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
A different event in a lot of life would be prom, where I work at the James J. Hill House. A number of years ago, we were approached by a school. Could they do their prom there? And, you know, we thought, well, we're a historic house museum. We can't have all of those youth here.
Right.
Well, we decided to go ahead and do that, and now we do about four or five of them every spring. So most of our Saturday nights have proms there, too. And since I don't have any kids, it's really interesting just to watch that, too. They're actually much better behaved than any of our corporate events. Because they've gone out and they've had dinner beforehand. There's no alcohol allowed.
Yeah.
There are chaperones. Sometimes there's a police officer who's also there. So I'm much happier having them in a historic house setting, which is really big. And there's a big enough room for them to dance and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And usually at the beginning, they do a grand march, which the Hill House is really good for because
mm-hmm.
there's a huge reception hall with a giant staircase that, you know, sort of comes together, kind of think Sound of Music, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, so they can be on, they can have someone on the loudspeaker announcing each of the couples as they come down and come down the stairs. And sometimes it just might be two friends or something like that, too.
Yeah.
And the parents come for that earlier part of it. Sometimes, like, the little brothers and sisters, you know, to, like, look at that, you know.
Yep.
So different than church, though, but the Hill House becomes a really special a key place, which I really like as a manager, knowing that all of these kids are remembering, hopefully, the Hill House is a wonderful place where a key event
mm-hmm.
in their life happened, and the house can be used once a private house, a Gilded Age mansion for a very exclusive group of people,
mm-hmm.
can now be used by everyone can come down the staircase and feel really, really special.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. There's one.
There's a book. I just want to say the name of it because I might forget at the end.
Sure.
It's called. It's by the Nielsen Gooden family, and I can't. There's a place you can. It's called For Everything a Season.
Yeah.
75 Blessings for Daily Life.
Yeah.
And just filled with it's rituals. It's rituals and blessings.
Yeah. Do you know if it's here?
I don't. It used to be here.
Yeah.
And I know that it sold out
in
the
library. Used it from the library, but I don't remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
And a non-spiritual, non-religious book that's still kind of helpful is Meg Cox, if you're in the COX, the new book of family traditions.
Mm-hmm.
There's a new version that just came out.
Mm-hmm.
Little things like your kids come home and say a little blessing or prayer for them, or a little say something specific when they come home, when they leave for the day, or
mm-hmm.
really cool, helpful book full of things like that.
Who's that author?
Meg Cox, COX, the new book of family traditions.
And, you know, it's not that our church is absent of ritual, and it's not that our church is is lacking powerful language because it has both of those. But but we go through the motions, you know, and sometimes if you just, you know, sometimes if you just tweak things slightly, and ask yourselves, how can we do this in a way that would really actually help our young people understand the historical event that we're marking? It can change our perspective on that rite, on that ritual. What I thought would be kind of fun to do too, we have about 10 minutes left, is what might be the components of a ritual?
Intentionality.
Okay.
Consistency.
The appropriate people are there, whatever the applications are.
Participants. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's some kind of physical
Bob the Rock.
Right.
Sam the Rock.
I would say it needs to be tangible. You need to be touching something.
Light and water are usually like a candlelight or water. I mean, in many rituals, are appropriate.
The more senses you use, the stronger the.
Right.
So it should be sensory as well.
Right. Smells, bells.
It has to be an event or something that you're wrapping it around.
Yeah.
That's important to know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Special food.
Right.
Lutefisk.
What do you mean by participants?
Well,
whoever said that.
We did an empty nest ritual in my home.
Okay.
And we were able to have my son who was leaving, and some of his grandparents, and my husband and myself, and the people who needed to be there were there. It was about that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, it's going to be different people depending on what the nature of the ritual is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Overused word, especially here at Holden, but community. I mean, people, the people, it's not just people standing around there, but it's
special
people. They have a
connection.
Yeah, and anyone who wants to come can come. Doesn't work. People don't show up, right? Can I use you as an example?
Sure.
So the kids played baseball earlier this week at the ball field, and Elijah really wanted Craig to go watch him play baseball, just out of the blue, right?
And before I got here, Elijah and I didn't really know each other, but we're in the Chalet number 4,
yeah.
On the second floor.
Yeah. So he comes into Craig's room and asks if he'd come down to the ball field and watch him play baseball, and then kind of ran and found him at breakfast. He's like, could you check your schedule and make sure that...
I said I would check my schedule.
Yeah. And but Craig said to him afterwards, Elijah, thank you for inviting me. I might not have gone down there to watch baseball if you hadn't invited me, right? But anyone could have, right? They were making announcements about it, but Elijah invited Craig, so Craig went. And in the church, sometimes we just sort of broadcast things and say, wouldn't you, of course you'd want to go to this. But what we need to do is go and say, LaRue, I really want you to come here. And what parents can do is with their kids is say, who do you really want to have at this event? And let's invite them. Let's ask them to come to this. Because if a little kid asks you to go,
you're not
you're going to go.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And it meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
It meant a lot to me.
Cool.
Because kids don't ask me to do stuff a lot. Because I just don't do a lot of stuff with kids. So it's great.
Cool. That's good.
I don't know if consistency meant repetition, but that comes to mind. I think kids especially love when things happen over and over.
Yeah.
Well, and that sets a foundation too that makes it, our kids at the end of their youth time, they do a prayer circle, and the first time the sixth graders come in and do it, none of them, hardly any of them say anything,
mm-hmm.
and by the end, they're going, okay, it's cool to do this,
mm-hmm.
you know, so as they get older, they're going, and then they become the older ones that mentor the younger ones.
Yeah.
You know, when it's adults planning all these things, the kids kind of come in as
a consumer,
and they're not really familiar with what's happening or going to happen, but as they repeat things, then they start to take ownership of that and come to expect it, come to feel like they're part of a significant part of it.
Yeah.
Well, when we've been at Wilderness for the last few years, I mean, a lot of the kids have been involved in planning the worship service that we've had. Which now is almost become kind of a tradition,
mm-hmm.
you know, the last several years. And they're doing stuff and have ideas there, you know.
The only thing I think to keep in mind is that they need our help at first.
Yeah,
you know,
usually adults too, but I mean, it's a nice collaborative thing.
Absolutely.
Sort of
absolutely. What a lot of congregations will do, because they want their kids to have ownership of worship, is they'll say, this is Youth Sunday, you know, and they'll throw them the keys for one Sunday, but they won't coach them, they won't teach them, they won't work with them, and it's horrible.
It's like, get it over with.
Yeah, and the kids are embarrassed with it, and no one shows up, and so how do we coach them and work with them and slowly give them ownership of it? We would do, one thing in Valparaiso, we started doing prayer on the cross once a month with our young people. We also tried to do one summer this outreach event where we put the basketball hoops out in the parking lot. We'd have ice cream, the pool table. Everyone could just, you know, we thought the kids from the community would just flock there. No one came. But the outreach event for our youth ministry in Valparaiso became prayer on the cross. That was the thing that kids from the community came to. They might not come to anything else, but the kids who came to our church would bring their friends, and their friends wanted to be there for prayer on the cross. So then when we would end, we'd do a senior recognition, and the kids wanted prayer on the cross. And I still get letters from them. So like Martha, who did the prayers last night in Vespers, a lot of you know Martha Schwing, was in the youth ministry then. So people her age, who are now at Divinity School, Seminary, and whatnot, are still writing letters, you know, about the power of that service to really mark time, and how that was their senior recognition service was prayer on the cross, and how powerful and important that was for them. So I'm always, you know, I think we're always sort of surprised. I'm always surprised by, I'm not anymore. That's why I do what I do. I used to be surprised by their desire for depth and meaning. Doesn't surprise me anymore. I expect it now. So, so go and do this.
Thank you.
You can keep your rock if you want to, or you can bring it back up for you. How do you spell repetition? My mind just turned up.